I spread a song so you can sing along with my special guest or two.
Or two.
You like to sing and dance, and this podcast, by chance, explores musicals for you. Theme Song, yeah!
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Life's But a Song, a podcast that likes to live in the land of musicals. I'm your host, John, and with me today, well, we're starting what I like to call John's Picks, and it's Matt Koplik, everyone. Woo!
Hey, everybody.
How's it going, like that voice? Matt? Yes. Are you going to do the whole episode in that voice?
I'm going to play around with voices. I'm going to, maybe I go lower, go really deep.
Go, hey, John, okay.
What up there?
And you going to work on your British accent as well?
Say what?
Are you going to work on your British accent as well?
Sure, yeah. You know, I was in the UK just last week.
Yeah.
I saw
as of this recording, yeah.
As of this recording, it was only a couple of days ago that I came back from London town. Yeah, it was fun.
And which is a great segue, because we're here today to talk about the 1997 cult classic Spice World.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
John is so excited.
I'm so excited. So the screenplay is by Kim Fuller, is directed by Bob Spears, and according to IMDb, world famous pop group the Spice Girls zip around London in their luxurious double-decker tour bus, having various adventures and performing for their fans. So I picked you for this one because
you sure did.
Because A, it's something different, you know, and it's super gay, and there's no, like, There was a stage show that was a jukebox musical of all Spice Girls that didn't go anywhere. But I was like, let's not do a Broadway thing for Matt. You know, he's got his own Broadway breakdown. He's fine. Let's give him something bananas. And
listen,
I'm like Cop Rock, but like better, kind of.
Well, okay.
Kind of, I say.
Yeah, no. So I will say Cop Rock. Everyone remember Cop Rock? So I want to just like go off the bat before we get into this thing. I grew up in America in the 90s, like I'm sure you did.
Yes, I did.
And I remember, you know, the Spice Girls and how huge they were. And it felt like they just sort of appeared one day and we were all obsessed. And then just as soon as we became obsessed, they went away because they broke up. They didn't break up in the spring of 1998, but that is when Ginger Spice left, and it was pretty downhill from there.
Literally like 6 months after this movie came out.
I know, so that's something else we're going to talk about, is one of the major points of drama and tension of the movie is like, oh my God, what if the Spice Girls broke up? And it's like, girl, they're breaking up in 6 months. But I had not seen this movie when it came out. I have never seen this movie before this recording.
Yes! I was hoping for this answer.
And I was, when John asked me to do it, I thought, sounds simple enough. I know a lot of people who've seen this movie. I'm sure I know it's popular for a cult classic and it's the Spice Girls and they're still relevant. I'll be able to find this. When I tell you the internet did not want me to watch this movie, the internet did not want me to watch this movie. It's not available anywhere. I went to places online that are reserved only for pedophiles and sex offenders just so I could find possibly a bootleg copy of Spice World. And finally, I had at my absolute lowest when I saw things I should never have seen, I reached out to John and I said, Jan, any way you can help me? And John said, well, I do have it on a physical DVD. And I'm like, gimme. I need to watch it in a really like.
Oh my God. I'm surprised. So Spice World put you on some sort of list and your computer now has all the STIs. I'm so sorry.
Absolutely. The CIA is going to be listening to this podcast being like, the fuck is going on with this
Why
dude?
Did you want to find Spice World?
Were you thinking this was the Spice Channel?
Well, so I've seen this movie numerous times. I have a vague memory of my dad taking me to go see this in theaters, which should have been hint number one. I mean, seven at that point, because loving Grease and watching it almost daily should have been hint number one. But this is, yeah. So, but rewatching it for this, I had this weird moment where I'm like, this movie feels like, you know, how like toys create movies and TV shows to create the lore so people will love it, like Transformers or Gem or anything
Or
like that.
Barbie.
Well, Barbie never did a TV show. They just showed up and people bought them until, you know, 2023 when the movie came out. Yeah.
I'm just saying Greta Gerwig has now established that there is Barbie canon, and that canon is all I know. I will not look at any other Barbie material.
So, but watching this is coming out at the height. This movie came out at the height of their popularity, but it feels like we're being introduced to these characters for the first time ever.
Yeah.
So like, Baby Spice is literally a baby having a lollipop and being very immature. Scary Spice. Yeah. They
also,
did things.
Yeah. Well, so I read up a little bit about this movie and about their fame trajectory because they were formed. They all auditioned separately to be a part of this girl group in 1994, and then basically spent all of 95 working hard on songs and getting their act together and figuring out sort of what it was that they did well and getting away from their original management, which is how they became the group at all. And then just sort of touring around the UK and LA and New
blowing
York.
Up, yeah.
Well, just meeting people in the industry because they weren't really performing publicly just yet. They were doing a lot of industry presentations in 1995 and in early 96. And the vibe on them was really strong. They actually were just called Spice, and they became Spice Girls because people kept – there was already a band called Spice, but also when they would tour and meet record execs and all that stuff, everyone just called them, oh, you know, the Spice Girls. You know, have you met the Spice Girls? Meaning like the band Spice, but those girls in the band
girls,
Spice.
Yeah.
And so they were like, let's just co-opt that. We're Spice Girls and you can call us the Spice Girls. And it worked. They blew up in the UK about 9 months before they blew up here. But
yeah,
I think because
they had to travel over.
Yeah. I think because they were already so famous internationally by the time they debuted in America, it was very easy for them to progress so quickly. And
yeah, because Wannabe just had a hit TRL and that got majority of teens in America.
1000%. It was truly like you woke up one day and you hadn't heard Wannabe, and then you did hear Wannabe and nothing was ever the same. And we all just sort of like, and then they had their second album came out really quickly after that in America. So they had, and there was a lot of backlash about that they had their debut and sophomore album in the same year. And this movie, yeah. Because you have to think about what their fame narrative was all over the rest of the world as opposed to America. They were already famous for the better part of a year by the time they got to America. So there was not overexposure in the UK or Europe. Like it felt here. Here we're like, God, we got two albums and a movie in 9 months. That's a lot. And I mean, which is fair, but
yeah, because they need to sell. You have to sell merch. You have to sell the product. You have to sell everything. And so, looking into this as well, they were filming this movie and doing tours and things like that, and making the Spice World album.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that,
which is
that
their second
album was
album.
Yeah, because that album was the movie was designed to promote the second album. All the songs from the second album are basically the soundtrack for the movie, but the album hadn't been written yet, so they were writing it while they were filming. So that's very exhausting, I'm sure. They also the movie, if you have seen it, there I was reading about it because I was watching. I was like, oh, I'm getting this kind of vibe from it, and when I was reading about it, I went, oh, I was correct in this assumption. Their inspiration was the Beatles movie A Hard Day's Night.
Yep. Yes.
So it's meant to be incredibly silly and fun. It's sort of like a Spice Girls Airplane.
But there's some things that you're just like, why did we go here with this? Like when the aliens show up.
Well, it's all part of the silliness. I'm not saying it all works. I was watching it going, I think I know what you're trying to do. And sometimes it's really clever, but there's a lot of air in this movie. It's not as tight a movie as it should be. I think it runs at about 95 minutes. It should be running at about 80. And there also aren't enough musical numbers, first of all. There
no.
was like It's like 25 minutes until you get an actual performance from them from start to finish. That's not, interrupted by something or just like a snippet of something.
Oh, the Say
And
You'll Be There rehearsal you're talking about, where Mel B is in that spacesuit.
I don't even think that's a full number though, because well, they
Well,
do the whole
they
number, but it gets cut up because they're
yeah.
showing Alan Cumming and his crew and like other things are happening. I'm like, can we just have a solid 3 minutes of the Spice Girls performing, please?
Well, so the story for this, the idea of this is the Spice Girls from the Spice Girls and Kim Fuller. Like it seems like the six of them got together, had a little powwow, maybe smoked a little something something, and were like, let's do a movie. And I think it should have been them like getting together, like a fictionalized story of them getting together. Because what we have here, I'm just like, I don't know what this is. Like, are we? And at the end, they're like, everything you just watched, well, it's not real potentially.
Yeah, that was another thing that was kind of odd, was like it was real except it wasn't, you know?
Yeah, because you're, I mean, I've seen this before. I did this actually on my other podcast where we did compare it to A Hard Day's Night. But watching it this time, I'm like, I was like, I need to lie down after thinking a little too hard at the end of this, being like, when the credit scene comes up and they're talking to the actors who play parts, except for that one guy who is still in character, the one that pitches the movies, I'm like, what did I watch? Am I watching the movie that is being pitched, or am I, or are they now making what we just watched? Like, what's going on here, everyone? And I know you don't
Yes.
have the answer, but
No, the answer is just yes.
yeah.
The answer is yes to all of it. There, this movie. So the thing about silly shit is you do kind of have to have a point of view for it. There has to be some kind of structure and some kind of restraint, because if you're just going, oh, we're just trying to have fun, fuck it, throw all the spaghetti at the wall. It's like, well, eventually you have the inmates running the asylum and things stop being funny because you just are confused. And I
Yes.
feel like with this movie, there is it that is exactly what is happening, is that they just kept on coming up with things that amused them on the fly. And it's obvious that, this probably wasn't the most upsetting movie to make. I know that the Spice Girls were very exhausted during it, but I don't think that they were upset making it. They got to do a lot
No,
of fun stuff, but it was
and
sort
have
of,
fun cameos, and I mean, their best friend Elton John showed up for like 3 seconds.
So Elton John showed up for 3 seconds, and I had two thoughts. My first thought was, that's Elton John. And then my second thought was, wig.
My thought for Elton John was, how much did he get paid for this? Because
Who
like,
knows? I don't think this movie was made that cheap, but it also wasn't that expensive. For '97, it cost like $25 million.
but still, like, it's Elton John and he
Sure.
has
Well,
one line.
yeah. So probably got like a cool 100K for the day, and then left.
I would hope so. But then you have, like you said, Alan Cumming, and then there's also Richard O'Brien, and it's weird. Like, they had too many ideas going. You had Alan Cumming being the documentarian for the Spice Girls. You had Richard O'Brien being hired by some
Barry
sort of,
Humphries. Barry Humphries, who is best known as Dame Edna.
yes, who is running like a tabloid or a newspaper or something, and he's trying to get the dirt on them, on the Spice Girls, because the Spice Girls are so squeaky clean that he wants something n super newsworthy that's not positive about them. And then the Spice Girls like have to find their sound in a way.
Their journey is kind of nothing. It's, we've got a big concert at the Albert Royal Hall coming up, so we've got to prepare for that. But
But
they
also
pers
our best friend that we don't that is only in this movie is pregnant and about to
yes,
have a baby.
she's all of their best friends and asks all of them to be the godmother. I do like that in this PG movie that a lot of tweens are watching. I think her name's like Nicole or Nicola or Nicola or something like
Nicola,
that.
yeah.
Nicola. They fully admit that Nicola is pregnant by her boyfriend, who she's not married to. And when she got pregnant, he walked away. And I'm like, see that, girls? Sometimes when a boy says he loves you, he don't mean it.
But also, is Nicholas supposed to be like the sixth Spice Girl? Like they never really established that, but we see in the flashback that she worked at the cafe
Right.
or
Yeah.
whatever that
I
they
think she's meant to
performed
sort of be the
Wannabe.
Louise to all of their baby June.
I
I think that's what it is.
that's a good answer,
You're
actually.
welcome. That's what I'm here for.
Oh my God. But yeah, like there's a lot of things that happen to them, but it's not super connected. Like we see them in Italy with the Butts. We see them go to boot camp.
Wait, did you say we see them in Italy with the butts?
Yes. Yeah. When they
Remind me
sing
of these butts?
Leader of the Gang, and at first the male dancers are dressed like slutty sailors, but then they had a compromise and they for the
Right,
performance
right,
they wore
right.
the purple jumpsuits with their ass cheeks hanging out. So
Right, right, right. Yes, the butts.
the butts.
Thank
And
you.
then
Sorry about that.
which I fucking love that song. And you can't find their version anywhere of it. So I'm very upset about that. But then they go to a boot camp for reasons.
It's that was confusing. It was like a it was I think it was supposed to be dance training with their new choreographer, but it just ended up being a boot camp.
Yeah, I mean, this movie, I think, is also trying to humanize Victoria Beckham. Well, now Beckham. Because
Yeah.
you watch it and you're
Are they
like,
trying to humanize her?
I think that's the point, because she has a lot of comedy lines or comedic, what are supposed to be comedic moments. And like there's some of them that I laughed at. Like when she's wearing the camo dress and heels and is like, I'm not doing this obstacle course. I'm just gonna
Oh, when they all are running away and she fully is just strutting away, it's if that was a great moment. No, I think the movie's very smart about making fun of their personas because their
Yeah.
personas aren't real. Their nicknames were done by a British tabloid when they first came out onto the scene, and the reporter who came up with the nicknames admits that it was that they did a lazy job. They just went with like the immediate thing they could think of. And
Ginger.
Emma Bunton was like sucking on a lollipop. And he was like, okay, Baby Spice. And like literally, what's her face? Yeah, when he was like Ginger Spice, he's like, oh, the red hair. He's like, I wasn't thinking. I was with them for 20 minutes. I got an immediate vibe from each one and just wrote that down. But then the women or young girls at that time, they kind of loved it and they thought it was fun and it allowed them to not really have to be themselves on stage and in public. It was their version of Sasha Fierce. So Emma Bunton's like, I'm not really Baby Spice, but when I go out into the world, I can be Baby Spice, and then I can reserve the real me for my friends and family. And so the movie does that and like
But
brings it up, dials it up to 11 for those Spinal Tap fans.
with it dialing it so far, though, it's like, okay, so are we to believe that this is how you act in your everyday life? I know it's not. It's like they're doing a character and everything, but because the movie is showing us, yes, Posh only wears the little Gucci dress. Yes, a Sporty Spice is always on a treadmill or a bike or something. It's just a little like you wrote one dimensional characters. You needed to like
No,
give
that's
them
but
a.
that was the point. They want th I don't think anyone should expect this to be a representation of who these gals are in the real world. It's just who they are in this movie. And this movie says you only think of Victoria Beckham as a posh little princess who wears short, tight dresses and high heels all the time and only pouts. That's going to be her character in the whole movie because it's going to make y'all laugh. And they're probably going to enjoy it. Like Emma Bunton is going to be on a swing on this double decker tour bus because she's baby. Like, that's, I think the problem is that, John, they don't get as much mileage out of exploiting those personas as they think that they are getting. They
Okay.
get some. Like every now and then something does make you genuinely laugh, like Posh Spice at boot camp wearing like stilettos and a camo dress. But
Or like the photo shoot montage where they get to play each other and
yeah.
make fun of each other's persona.
Yeah. Like that's all well and good. But then there are a whole bunch of other moments where it's tired and it just makes no sense. And for a movie as silly as this, again, you don't necessarily need it to be densely plotted and have a ton of continuity, but you also just can't rely on fumes alone.
Right. Because then it gets
Yeah.
tiring.
Yeah, and makes people like you watch the alien scene and go, "What?" When what they want you to do is have the alien scene and go like, "Wah-ha-ha-ha-ha,
Yeah.
so funny." I do like that it takes all of 5 seconds for them to understand the
I was
aliens. I
about to
thought that
say
was
that,
a
yeah.
very stupidly funny moment. Because they're like,
That's
"Oh my god,
funny.
aliens, what do we say to them?" And then the aliens start talking and they can just like understand the subtitles.
And how many L's is that, or whatever
And
they're
that was
spelling
there's
the.
like when the aliens ask for an autograph and they're signing in, it goes, "Who would make it out to?" Like, she goes, "How many K's is that?" It's four. Yeah, that's 4 K's. Like they all just they're like, I think
Like
that shit's funny.
that shit's funny, yeah, but
Because
you
it's yes
know,
anding. That's a yes and scene.
yeah, but like I don't know, like I do love this movie, but I mean there's not enough of them singing or lip syncing or something, because like there's that moment right when they're at the club and Nicola goes into labor, where they are, is that who do you think you are? That's who do you think you are? Where I'm like, is
Probably, yeah.
it playing or are they singing it? Like,
Yeah, the movie.
the movie doesn't know. I think the movie was like, we're just fun. And for me, I'm like, I need a little bit more than just fun. I need
Well, the
like,
movie, they wanted it to, they want to have it both ways. They want all of the songs that you listen to be Spice Girl songs. So it's a combo of songs playing during a montage, during a scene, and them singing it in actual time. And I think for people like us, maybe not everyone feels this way, but we would rather it be any time that we hear a Spice Girl song, it's because they're performing it. And I don't care what the reason is that they're performing it. It doesn't have to just be rehearsal. It can be something as stupid as they're at that cafe in their youth and go, "Hey, we just wrote a song. Want to hear it? Blah. Well, I'll tell you what I want."
like, wow,
Like,
what I
I
wrote.
don't care.
Yeah.
Have them go to that photo shoot being bored out of their goddamn minds and just start singing their new song and having fun and starting doing the dress up thing. I get frustrated when it's a Spice Girl song in the background because I'm only getting 20
Yes.
seconds of it. And I'm like, you need to give me 2 minutes minimum.
And some of them, like, do it and stop. And Lady is a Vamp is in the credit scene, the end credit scene. But like, they're bops, and you want to like sell the bops. Like, yes,
Well,
Mama and To Be When Two Become One and all that are fantastic songs in and of themselves. But they're the ones that I'm like, you can be in the background.
yeah, Stop is one that made me mad that because that wasn't one that they perform. I think that's one that they play in the
That's one
background,
in the
and I just
background, yeah.
and I was angry about that. Especially because
Yeah.
the music that we do get them in performance for, no matter how short it is, are not up tempos. The opening of this movie, John. Stop me if you think if I'm going off the rails here. But the opening of
No.
this movie
Or are
fully
you
had me
going?
convinced. I was about to watch a Skinamax movie. I was about to watch a softcore porn film.
You haven't gone too much.
Yeah, I think I'm relatively within
Well,
reason
yeah,
here.
because it starts and they're dancing in silhouette, and you see them, and it's like Mel B, Emma,
With close-ups of them too, in addition to the silhouettes of them dancing, and the silhouettes are really cheap-looking CGI, which is a major red flag in porn industry of that time. Of just like, we have graphics. I mean, it's Windows 95 CD-ROM graphics, but they're graphics. And so, and the music is synthesizer slow dance, and you're like, okay, Randy Spears is about to dry hump some girl on a bed in about 5 seconds, isn't he?
Yep,
And then it
basically.
like turns into them at a clear. Doing their number. I'm like, oh, so a movie called Spice World is opening with a slow dance. That
It
is what we call
should
a
have
choice.
started with Wannabe
Or stop right now. Like if
or
Wannabe,
Stop. Yeah.
yeah, like I understand maybe wanting to hold off Wannabe for a while because that's the anthem. But like then find one of their other, and actually I think maybe one of the problems is that because that second album hadn't
What's
dropped
being
yet, they didn't
written?
know what was going to be the hits. But I think people like us who at the very least have a general understanding of musical theater in the same way that the Spice Girls understand alien language, we're like, you gotta open this movie, this dumb ass silly fucking movie with a banger, because it tells the audience this is going to be nothing but silly fun. If you open with a slow dance, you're like, what are we watching here again?
Do I need to turn the lights down or something? Like, what's going on? Like,
do I need to grab the lotion? Is that what you're telling me?
Do I need to close my bedroom door? What am I doing?
Yeah, do I not watch this with my mother? Do I have to watch this alone?
But, I mean, I understand having Spice Up Your Life being the Royal Albert Hall one, because that is, like, the song of the second album. And that is the one that they were like, this is the one you're going to love. Trust us. The music video is going to be bananas, but you're going to love it.
So Josie and the Pussycats, I think, watched this movie and picked up all the things this movie did wrong so they could do it right. Because Josie and the Pussycats is dumb, but that plot follows through. There is a three-act structure to it. That movie also has three tentpole songs in it, and they give it to us in the correct order. They start with Three Small Words, total fucking banger. Then they give us 40 minutes of plot and other stuff until we get Pretend to Be Nice, another one, and then we close out with Spin Around. I'm like, that is how you do it.
Oh, so Kim Fuller, I was wondering if she co-wrote that one. She did not, but then she went on to do the S Club TV show and movies and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, Kim Fuller, why are you working with pop groups? Just
because they,
I mean, that's also where the money is too. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I know Josie and the Pussycats was written by the same people who wrote Can't Hardly Wait. And I feel like they did another solid one, but I can't remember. But no, Josie and the Pussycats is a movie that got a really bad rap when it came out because critics.
I love that one. I did it years ago. And yeah,
people love it now. And I loved it when it came out. And I was told I was just a dumb 11-year-old for loving it. But I remember the reviews for it were so atrocious. And it was looking back, it's a case of pretty smart critics being willingly
not
dumb.
Really understanding. Yeah,
like, because the movie's not deep. It's a very silly commentary on capitalism and things like that, and the sort of shallowness of the music industry, and just sort of how in a capitalist society everything is connected, and you know, we are all being manipulated to buy things that we don't want and we don't need, and pressured into liking things we don't really like. But they do it in a way that's similar to Airplane and Hard Day's Night. And critics just couldn't comprehend that. So they just were like, this movie is the worst. And it took a while for people like us who grew up on it. And eventually, as we got older and our brains developed, we look back on movies like Josie and the Pussycats and we go, is this movie actually good? Or was I just an influenced child? But we go, no, this one's not. Like, we look at Spice World and we go, that one's not good, but my nostalgia allows me to still like it. We look back at Josie and the Pussycats and we go, no, that one's good. That was a good one.
Yeah, like, I think I wrote on Letterboxd that this was, like, the hit of nostalgia I needed for the day. Like, when I rewatched Spice World, I was just like, oh, right, I do love the Spice Girls music. And this movie is, like, I know I was shitting on it earlier, but, like, this movie is fun. It is dumb, it's silly, it's like a good movie when we were younger to distract us so our parents can go do something else, you know. Yeah. Like,
you can also like something and not have it be good. That's totally fine. If you're aware that the thing you like isn't good, that doesn't make you dumb for liking it, because you're acknowledging all of its flaws but also being like, I don't know, it gives me what I need in the moment.
Yeah.
And so when you eat an Oreo, you know it's not an apple, but you want an Oreo sometimes.
It's like Kraft cheese, not real. It's in quotes.
Yeah, macaroni and cheese is not filet mignon. But no. Sometimes you just want macaroni and cheese. Nothing wrong with that.
You haven't seen this, but you listened to their music before.
Oh, but of course.
Okay. I mean, you are a gay American male of a certain age. I would hope you've heard their music in the last 20-something years.
Yes. Well, I think anybody who, especially now with the internet, anyone who's alive with access to the internet has heard a Spice Girl song at least once. My own father, who does not understand any of this shit, has absolutely heard Spice Girls.
Of course.
So if he has, the rest of you have.
Yeah, because you couldn't escape their music. And it is interesting to think about that They were around for such a short period of time, but they have made a lasting impact.
They
'Cause
sure
like
have.
after Ginger left, they did do like one or two albums with just the four of them, and then they all just broke apart and like they came together for the London Olympics. I believe it was only four of them. I think Victoria wasn't part of that reunion, but like there's also been rumblings about other reunions and things like that, which, hey, I mean, these songs are great. They're fire, as the kids say.
Yeah, I think even they were, because they reunited all five of them. I want to say around 2006 or seven, they did a world tour, and I remember how huge it was
Yes.
that when that got announced. And I think the response that they got for that reunion surprised even them, because
They were like,
like
we're only out for like 3 years. Like, what are you doing?
yeah, and like, you know, I don't know, like comeback tours don't always do great, and you could be sort of still at like the height of your popularity and still not sell out totally. We thought maybe people were done with us. We thought this was going to be sort of like a nice nostalgia thing. It was something for us all to do, and they sold out, I think, every single performance they had within a minute of tickets going on sale all over the world, because
Yes.
they meant so much to so many people, and then went away, and people forgot how much they meant until they were reminded, and now we'll never forget. They maybe aren't like at the forefront of pop culture all the time, but they are always in the soup.
Yeah, and there was a they re there was a video of one of their songs. I don't remember which one it was, but it was showing like girls and women around the world, and it was involved like they there was a was it Wannabe? It wasn't Wannabe, or was it Spice Up Your Life? It was some one of their big songs that they were like dancing to, and I was like, that's a fun video that none of the Spice Girls are in, but it's still them, and we're still, you know, reminded of, oh right, this I did like this song, and it's still pretty good. Like even in this movie, with the little songs that you hear, like you see them perform or you hear, I'm still just like, oh right, this album, man, slapped so hard.
Yeah, no, it sure do. It sure do. This movie does definitely reminds you that they have some good old songs in their rep.
Also, I didn't realize Victoria sang as much as she that this movie shows me. When they
So,
do little solo moments and songs, I
yeah,
didn't think it was her.
Sporty seems to be the one. Mel, I think it's Mel
C.
B. No, Mel C. Mel C is the one who seems to be the biggest vocalist of the group. She tends to
Yes.
get the biggest solos. Mel B, I feel like, rarely sings. She tends to do more of the talking on rhythm. She's the one who does the, like, oh, I'll tell you what I want. Like, she's the one who starts that off.
Yes.
I also remember when Mel B came to Broadway to do Rent as Mimi and fell flat on her face. I did not see her, but I mean, I was here for school at the time and knew a lot of Rent heads. And they all went, and I just remember them all reporting back week after week, God, she's terrible. God, she's terrible.
And then
And I
she
felt
did
really bad.
Chicago, right? I feel like
Probably.
she.
She was probably better suited for Chicago than Rent, but people thought she was going to be so good in Rent because she's Scary Spice and that's her vibe. And then she just
Right.
couldn't really handle it.
It just felt like to me that Victoria was the one that was there for face and look and to
That
round
is how
out.
I remember her as well.
But you watch this and you're like, oh shit, you had more solo lines than I think you, than I remember. Because the other ones felt more singers, like, or like they could carry a tune. And like
Yeah.
they've all, I think all of them but Victoria went on to do solo careers.
Well, Victoria also, you know,
Well,
she
she
married that
married
David
David
guy and
Beckham.
then basically became tabloid celebrity forever. That also might have messed up our memory of her in the group because of what she became afterwards.
Yeah, she became more of like an influencer before that was a term.
Yeah, she became known for who she was married to, and that is, I mean, I feel like that's sort of the opposite of girl power, but it is also her choice, so girl power.
Yeah.
But re in regards to this movie, let's get back to this movie for a second. Something else I wanted to say. First of all, if you are an Anglophile for pop culture, or pop culture Anglophile, I should say, there are so many faces in this movie that will delight you, because we mentioned Barry Humphries of Dame Edna fame. We've mentioned Richard O'Brien, who wrote Rocky Horror Show. And we also mentioned Alan Cumming as the documentarian for the group, which I
who's
also
a
gotta
little
say.
Who's a little nobody that nobody knows.
Yeah. He, well, this movie came out like 2 months before Cabaret started performances on Broadway. So that's a lot of fun.
Oh, shit.
He was he was about to blow the fuck up. I also got to say, I think he looks fine in this movie.
Yes.
He looks very handsome in Spice
yes,
World. And I've never.
He's a very young Alan Cumming, everyone.
Yeah, I've never like been attracted to him. I've always thought he was so insanely talented. He has a sexuality that is very charismatic, but I was never like, oh yeah, I would totally do him. In this, I was watching and just going like, I think I would do Alan Cumming in this movie, which was a new train of thought for me. Also, there's Jennifer Saunders of AbFab, Absolutely Fabulous fame.
Yes.
She's the woman at the party talking to, I think it's Victoria. I think she's talking to
Victoria.
Pasta.
Because they talk about manta rays and
yes.
She's like, I love manta ray. I love his style. I love everything about him. I own everything.
I'm wearing manta ray shoes right now. And she, while still talking to Victoria, turns around and shouts at someone off screen. I'm talking to a Spice Girl. I know. Like, just she's being that annoying bitch. And
yes,
other people. Oh, I forget his name, but he's a Canadian comedian. He was on Slings and Arrows. He was on Superstore, but he's in it. He plays the screenwriter that's pitching to the agent manager, played by Richard Grant, by the way. And Meatloaf plays the tour bus driver. And George Wendt of Cheers fame plays the Hollywood producer that's also trying to pitch them this movie. And Hugh Laurie is in it for a hot second. He plays Hercule Poirot in the fantasy sequence they have. There are a lot of fantasy sequences in this movie.
There's a lot of magical realism
yes.
in this
well,
movie.
There's a whole, so the third act that we were sort of referring to earlier, throughout the movie, these two Hollywood types are pitching a screenplay to Richard Grant, the Spice Girls manager. And it's unclear when this pitch is happening, because throughout the movie, the Spice Girls are traveling all over London and doing random things, and Richard Grant, their manager, is with them most of the time, making announcements on the tour bus, which, by the way, is when you, it's like a TARDIS. When you get inside, it's the
it's
size
huge.
Of a loft. Yeah, huge, a loft.
By the way, the person who pitches, his name is Mark McKinney.
Yes, that's him, Mark McKinney. He is on Superstore. He's on Slings and Arrows. He got famous for doing another show in the 80s in Canada. I think Kids in the Hall, I think that was his thing.
Yeah, he did Slings and Arrows, Kids in the Hall, A Night at the Roxbury.
And
he's
Superstore.
He's been just all over. Superstore.
Yeah, no, he's been around forever. And then George Wendt, most people know as Norm from Cheers. But so they've been pitching this movie to Richard Grant. And then we get to this, it's not really a chase sequence. The Spice Girls go to the hospital to see Nicola's baby get born, and then they have to get to Royal Albert Hall. So they alone have to drive the double decker bus. And then all of a sudden, Mark McKinney is pitching this driving sequence to Richard Grant.
That's the part that really fucked me up, because now I'm like, what's real?
Yeah, you're like, oh, this whole movie has been a pitch, and Mark McKinney's changing things on the fly. So we see things happening on screen that then get changed. And a joke that I actually thought was really funny was how the bus, in order to make it, has to jump London Bridge while the gates are up. And they show it being, and they go, well, that sounds really cool. That sounds really expensive. And then shot they show is a toy bus doing it on a toy London Bridge. And they go, it doesn't have to be that expensive. And I was like, that is a good joke. But no, it especially because once he finishes the pitch, he goes, and then the girls go right through that door and they're backstage at Royal Albert Hall waiting for them. And the Spice Girls don't show up. And Richard Grant gets mad. He was like, you promised they'd be here. And it's like, what do you mean he promised they'd be here? He was pitching a movie, dude. But then they show up. So it's a whole Chris Nolan snake eating its own tail. What is reality? And what is Leonardo DiCaprio spinning that top thing in Inception?
Well, Matt, how could you forget there is a James Bond in this movie?
Roger Moore.
Roger Moore, who I think filmed everything in a day.
Looks it, too.
Because I'm obsessed that he has a different animal every scene.
Yeah. I mean, of course.
A different animal and a different costume as well. Like,
absolutely.
He went through costume changes for this.
He sure did. And he never leaves his, like, little lair. For a second, I thought he was the villain. And then I think he's just like, because the way they film him, he seemed like a Bond villain. But no, he's just like the head of the label. And the joke is that he's always speaking in what are sort of haikus. So whenever Richard Grant gets off the phone, he's like, I have no idea what he just said.
But we've all had that manager, supervisor, upper up,
What do you
boss.
think this is, John? You speak all the time on this podcast. And I go, yeah, what you said.
You're welcome, everyone.
You're welcome.
And also, like the there's somebody in this that they had to cut out because of some sort of who was it? Hold on. Speaking of me speaking nonsense and then
Yes, absolute nonsense.
total nonsense. Oh God. Gary Glitter. Gary Glitter was in this, but he had he was arrested for child porn offenses, so they cut him out.
You know, that old chestnut.
And then they had other references to like Princess Diana and Gianni Versace, but they passed away as they were filming this, so they were like, let's just cut them out.
Yeah, they filmed this in the summer of 97 and it came out in the UK, I want to say around October or November of 97, and then in America, January of 98. And in between, both Princess Diana and what's his face both died.
Gianni Versace.
Gianni Versace, yes. Sorry, yeah, no, him. That flop.
Well, so you were correct. It came out in December in the UK, and then like a month later in January, it came out in America.
Which is rare. Usually it's the reverse, but this is a very British film,
And
so
then
makes sense.
in 2019, it came out in Singapore.
Finally, after all his time, they got girl power in Singapore.
For the glory hose? I don't know what that is.
I don't think they know what it is either.
So, all in all, after watching this movie, did you enjoy it?
Sure. I thought this was going to be a bit of a slog. It wasn't a total slog. It is 20 minutes too long,
Yes.
which is wild to say about a 95-minute movie, but if you watch this movie, you'll understand why it should be 20 minutes shorter. Like, this should be a Disney Renaissance length movie. But it is
With an I want song and everything.
1000%. What do you think Stop Right Now is?
True, you're
They need
right.
somebody with a human touch. Come on. But I did find it enjoyable. There were moments when I was definitely looking at my phone.
Oh, of
And then there were
course.
moments when I went, okay, that's cute. It was also just fun to see all the Brits that I enjoy. I was so happy to see Jennifer Saunders. I am definitely much that gay. I had another note in here. Oh, the fantasy sequence where they're imagining what they'd be like as mothers. Another note I have is, how long until I am given a full ass uninterrupted song, please? And then I wrote right after that, what is this? Ain't too proud?
Oh, well, you know what's interesting too is like they all have a shared fantasy sequence, like or shared fantasy sequences throughout this, to the point where even like there's that when they're in the mansion after the boot camp and they're like, we all had the same dream except for Victoria, who was not wearing makeup instead of being faceless. Like that's the button of the joke, like.
Yeah.
Like there are some things in here that are funny, but like they're also I read before they got into the Spice Girls, like they were auditioning for other things, and I think Mel C is the only one that was not trying to also be an actor. So
Sounds about right. I mean,
yeah.
also, I wouldn't call any of these gals actresses in this movie. They're fine, they're energetic, they're having a good time, but they're not, none of them are really good at landing the punchline, and the director's not really good at keeping the momentum going. So this
Right.
isn't, I am not saying that this screenplay is a masterpiece. It's not. It's got a lot of bumps in it. But I would argue that this movie is the equivalent of seeing a bad production of a good show, where you can when so like an example being when I saw the 2009 revival of Guys and Dolls, a show that I did not like until that point, I remember watching it going, huh, what an interesting moment, because I'm not liking this production, but it's making me understand that this material is good. I'm able to sort of separate the two.
Okay.
And Spice World is not a good material, but there are moments in it where you go, that's a good joke, or like this is a funny scene. I'm not laughing because it's not being set up to succeed right now. Like, the camera is in a weird spot. There's like Vaseline on the filter. The Spice Girls don't know what comedic timing it is. But I understand that that joke is funny.
But also, you don't see their exhaustion, which is a good thing.
Yes, I don't want to see women exhausted ever. They're
right,
only
no,
supposed
no,
to be entertaining for me.
But like, we understand too that like the turnover that's happening behind the scenes is the constant moving, you know, like you're going to a studio to record. Because I feel like, is Wannabe like the only one that's captured semi-live?
Yeah. I think it's the, yeah, I don't think it's actually sung live. Everything is almost
or at least
definitely
recorded on the set, not pre-recorded. Because it sounded a little too ambient and natural for it to be, you know, them in a studio.
Okay. We might disagree on that, because it didn't sound to me like it was in the room. It didn't sound entirely like the original recording. So they might have done a second recording for the movie, but don't quote me on that. But it did not sound like they were recording it in the actual cafe in which they were singing it.
Oh yeah, no. I mean, I think I'm trying to convey the same thing, where it's like it. I don't know if they sang it somewhere that's not a studio, because it does sound a little rough. It sounds
less studio polish. Yeah. Well, I think that it doesn't have all the backing tracks that we associate with that song, because it's supposed to be their like cassette tape demo. But
yeah,
so maybe,
and they're having
maybe that's
fun
what
and
it is.
Singing.
Yeah, maybe like it sounds like a synthesizer and a prayer, but instead of a full blown computer system in Abbey Road or whatever. So maybe. I don't know, maybe.
The computer system in Josie and the Pussycats as well. That's
yeah, absolutely.
That's making
all
me
want to
buy orange stuff. Everything is orange.
Yep. Jude Law is the new Matt Damon.
Matt, is there anything else that you want to talk about before we get into Sharp and Flat?
I think we're just gonna get into all of it with Sharp and Flat.
Great.
That's,
let's
do it.
Sharp Flat.
So in this section, we're going to highlight some moments, whether or not we talked about it. If we liked it, it's sharp. And if we didn't like it or thought it could change, it's flat. Do you want to start with flats? I don't really have that many flats, actually, surprisingly.
Okay.
So prior to our discussion, I wrote down that the Spice Girls being their only personas is my first flat. Because there are times where it's a bit much. Like, get the joke, move on. You don't have to. There's that one scene that is like the perfect time of them being too much of their characters, when they question if they are being too much of their personas.
Yeah.
Like, in the bus. That is fun. That is fun. And then we move on from there. I also, this is a John Reilly survey flat for you. I'm flatting that the Spice Girls version of Leader of the Gang is not available. I want it. I need it. Somebody get me the audio of it. Uh-huh. I need it in my life. I also am flatting the Leader of the Gang backup dancer costumes, because they just looked so cheap and bad. And I get it. That is also the joke. But also, we're doing performance wear. So, and speaking of performance wear, I'm flatting Mel C's performance costumes, because it's just, I'm going to have a Rue moment. Like, you know, do not get me H&M shit on my runway. Like, add a little zhuzh, add something, add a sparkle, add leather. Do it. Because when you look at the lineup, she sticks out in a bad way, especially at the end. You've got Ginger in that red, sparkly, swimsuity looking thing. You've got, you know, Baby and Posh in their personas, but also it's a little glamorized and everything. Sporty, you're like, you're just wearing track pants and a sports bra. Like, I just wish that there was a little more. That's just my expectations. I mean, it's not,
sure,
it's not bad.
I don't think the stylist in this movie did a wonderful job, but I'm not sure if they were trying to make a joke out of some of the Spice Girls' wardrobe attire during rehearsals. Because, like, when Scary Spice is basically wearing a spacesuit in the middle of a.
I fucking love that. I don't understand it, but I love it.
With hair, with like her hair in tight little knots that become a full on fro like 3 seconds later. Some things are fun, like Victoria's, you know, constantly changing dresses, but they're always sort of in a similar mode.
Yeah, they're tight, short, you know, tubes.
Yeah, all I'm saying is that Devil Wears Prada can sleep at night safely with this movie out in the world. That's all I'm saying. They ain't worried about this.
No.
I think one of my flats is this is a technical, but like truly the direction of the movie. I feel that this movie could have been a lot more fun if it just was more
had
confident,
a direction.
It had better direction, confident in its silliness and tighter and faster, because it's just a little too slow going for the jokes to actually be hilarious. It's sort of more of a than a aha. And I'm also gonna flat the acting of our main quintet.
Go for it. I mean,
especially because the rest of the movie is filled to the brim with incredible character actors who eat this shit up for breakfast every day, and they are the ones that make this movie more enjoyable. And the Spice
even
Girls themselves,
Meatloaf is more relaxed and hilarious, and
he's
also a singer who has had some acting credits to his name, but like,
yeah,
he's very natural in this.
He's very natural, and I think everyone else is really good at playing up the silliness and committing to it, and the Spice Girls are just sort of on a boat at sea going, how did we get to dry land? Oh, I also want to flat the two girls that they go on the boat with at that one point. Speaking of boats, they go on a boat with those two girls. And I want to flat Nicola having to be pregnant at all, because why put children in my movie?
Yeah.
Don't need it, don't want it.
I mean, it could have been that she's having a rough time. She doesn't need to be pregnant. Like, it could be like, you could still have the same similar beats of like, we're bad friends. Let's be better friends.
Absolutely. She's having a bad time. Her boyfriend left her, and they only really see her for a short moment. And then the next time they see her, things are worse. And they go, oh, let's bring Nicola along for the last 30 minutes of the movie. Because we all know Nicola speaks alien. Like, that would have been fun. But alas, it's that Nicola's pregnant. She wants them all to be godmother, to which I'm like, what a terrible thing to ask a friend to be. I thought you liked me.
Or they take her along, but they lose her somewhere in Italy. And
she's
with the man buns.
Nicola's so forgettable. They keep forgetting to...
That she's in it.
Yeah. She's the Anne in this movie. Like, Anne is in Arrested Development. They're always just forgetting her or mistaking her with other people.
Okay. Sharps. I sharp the magical inside of the bus, the TARDIS of it all.
Absolutely.
Which, I mean, honestly... That's their reference, were they just like, whatever, man, we're going to have our own spaces. It's going to be fine.
Yeah, I don't know if it's actually a reference to the TARDIS in Doctor Who, because no one ever comments how much bigger it is on the inside of that tour bus than it looks on the outside.
That's fair.
I think it's just a joke of, you know, this rather large double decker tour bus, you go inside and it's the size of a house.
You have a giant playroom.
Exactly.
I also sharped the photo shoot sequence. I thought that was that's fun, and I feel like that's like one of the like they are having fun clearly.
Oh, I forgot a flat.
Okay,
so when they're in, I think it is Italy, when they're singing, do you want to be in my gang,
the leader of the gang.
So they're singing, do you want to be in my gang, but the way that they sing it, do you want to be in my gang, it sounded to me like, do you want to be in MAGA?
Oh.
Do you want to be
well,
in
you're,
MAGA?
So you're watching, but also you're watching this post that. This is pre.
This predates MAGA by like almost 20 years. This is, I'm just saying, I'm listening to going, oh boy. But.
Want to be in MAGA. Yeah. I also sharped Victoria during the obstacles course, because it was that was funny. That is a funny moment of her just walking around and not doing anything.
Yeah, no, I loved that. I'm sharping all of the cameos. They got amazing icons to be in this. I'm sharping Hugh Laurie, who I don't think was famous at that point yet, playing Poirot in Emma Button's Fantasy. The joke being that as Baby Spice, because she's so adorable, she can pretty much get away with anything.
Get away
and the
with
fantasy
murder,
is
yeah.
She's in a Poirot murder mystery by Agatha Christie and very clearly is the culprit. And Poirot doesn't pick her because she's so adorable.
I sharped Meatloaf and Roger Moore just because, or specifically Roger Moore's scenes, just because they are bonkers. And I also sharped the following performances: Leader of the Gang and Spice Up Your Life.
Spice Up Your Life is a definite sharp. I also want a sharp Alan Cumming looking very handsome. I want a sharp Richard Grant giving Shakespearean acting to Spice World.
He deserved everything. He
eventually gave it to him, just it took a minute.
Of course. Would you add any of the songs to your life's playlist? I just wrote all of them at this point.
Yeah, they are on my life's playlist.
Yes, but if somebody has Leader of the Gang or Spice Girls, if you're listening, please release your version of Leader of the Gang. Thank you. Because we know they're listening.
Yeah, of course they are. Everyone's listening to this, especially after the dark tunnels I went through to find this movie and ultimately fail. Everyone's listening to this podcast to find out what the fuck it was I was trying to get to.
Well, actually, everyone's listening to it because you're on. So,
oh, John.
Yeah.
That's a sweet thing. That might be the only nice thing you've said to me on this entire episode.
Like I said, we're doing something different. So, but I also appreciate your knowledge or your research you did, because I clearly did not do any research into the Spice Girls' rise to fame.
Doing research on your episodes, John, takes time away from you making sorbet, and thus you're like, why would I do any research when I can just craft some lovely gelato before the episode and make that my opinion?
Oh my god. And on that note, Matt, we're done with the episode. Yay.
But wait, no, I have one neutral.
Oh, you have a natural?
Oh, sorry, I have one natural, I should say.
Oh, I'm sorry to jump ahead. So, you have a natural.
I am not saying that white straight men are right. But
where are we going?
When it's being said by straight white men in the movie that the Spice Girls are going to break up, and they're like, that's sort of like the tension in the movie. And you're like, it's like, oh my god, these men are trying to break us up. I'm like, well, you did. Like almost immediately after this movie came out, so like these men were kind of right, and I don't like saying that as a white man myself, but I think of myself more as a boy.
And there's no way you're straight.
Yeah, well, I didn't say
another compliment.
White men. Just these white men. They are correct about that, and I don't like to say that they're correct about it, because especially in a movie like Spice World, you don't want.
No.
You know, Armie Hammer to be correct about something in a movie like Spice World. Not that he's in it, but men like him, you know?
Yeah. You don't want Barry Humphries playing a villain? Question mark?
Yeah. When Barry Humphries is playing the villain, you don't want his character to be right about something. When Barry Humphries is Dame Edna and they're like the fun little side character, they can be right about some stuff.
If Dame Edna said that they were going to break up, I think I'd be like, yes, queen, let's go.
Yeah. It should have been Dame Edna in the movie. She should have been their manager.
Yes. Yes.
I don't think the world was ready for it.
We were never, not 1997, but no. Let's retcon and go back. Let's get in our time machine, go back in time and be like, listen.
This is what's going to happen. I mean, we weren't ready for the footwear of this movie, let alone Dame Edna coming on and saying opinions.
God, this made me like look back at the fashion of the 1990s, late 90s, and I'm like, whoa.
Yeah, listen, we don't have much of a leg to stand on these days. Our fashion is not great right now, but
no,
the 90s was definitely assertive.
They had, I think the theme of like this whole episode, including the fashion of the time, is just that we're having fun.
Yeah. Life's not serious. Why not have low rise jeans and star shaped sunglasses and call it a lifetime, you know?
And sign an autograph to an alien whose language I learned in 5 seconds.
Yeah. Everyone should know how to spell. It's 4Ks. That's what they said.
It's 4K.
Have you ever watched Superstore, John?
No, I have not. Okay, does he do a joke like that in there?
No, so it takes place obviously like in a, you know, Walmart-esque place, and all there's this episode where they are in, all the employees are separated into teams, and whichever team sells the most stuff by the end of the day wins a little something. And Kelly, one of the employees, she's in the TV department, and this guy is looking at this widescreen. She goes, "Ah, you should get this one. It's 4K." And he goes, "So what exactly is 4K?" And she goes, "Oh, the first K is knowledge." And then we just go to the next scene. So just talking about
the 4Ks
in that guy, in that alien's name. I'm like, that's Kelly going, "And the first K is knowledge."
And I'm keeping that in. Matt, let's call it. We're done with the episode.
We're done. We're amazing.
With this non-musical but semi-musical movie. What do you have to plug or promote?
I have my podcast. So I'm not sure if my podcast will be running at that moment. That might be a hiatus moment, or I might be in the thick of a new series. I can't tell you. But I do have a whole bunch of episodes about the Tony Awards that just happened in 2024. We are recording this the day after those Tony Awards.
Woohoo!
Woo! John will be on the podcast before this episode comes out, covering a movie musical. We won't say what, but it lines up with my earlier series, Problematic Question Mark, Shows You're Mad At and Their Possible Redemption. And John and I will figure out if this movie musical is worth redeeming or not.
And here's a hint. I've done it already on my podcast.
There you go. But he'll do
it's
more
not
research.
Not really
for this
a
one.
Hint, but like, yeah, I'll do a little research on this one.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, you can listen to Broadway Breakdown. It's available wherever you listen to podcasts. You can follow me on Instagram at Matt Koplik, usual spelling. I host a whole bunch of stuff on there, sometimes written reviews, video reviews, every now and then.
Oh my God. Everyone needs to watch, read his reviews, especially when he puts them in his story. Or if he's doing like a wine movie night.
Mm-hmm. I haven't done a drunk movie night in a minute, but that should be coming up soon. I have a video review of Lempicka that constantly is popping up in my notifications because someone new finds it and messages me about it. And for the most part, no one has been mad at me. But I've had like one or two people be like, because Lempicka famously had a very ravenous fan base. Small but violent,
and I did tell you this before we started recording. I personally love reading Matt's reviews on it because it's like talking to a friend. You know, yeah. he's very like, this is why this is not good, but also note this is my opinion. So yeah.
This is what I don't like this, and here is why I am not liking it.
Yes,
but like, let's talk about why maybe someone else would. But
and sometimes he's a little like sassy with his. Answers, and I'm here for all of it.
Yeah. I every now and then I will say something that on the sassier side. I don't love total bitchiness because I find people who just go for the quip, A, they're not as clever as they think they are, but also it half the time it doesn't come out of anything truthful. Bitchiness is more cutting if it comes out of truth than if it is, you know, is for the sake of saying something bitchy. And if I am looking at my raw material as I'm editing the video and I go, that was kind of mean. And I go, but is it true? And I go, like, well, it's true. I'll keep it. Sometimes I'll say something off the fly. And then as I'm watching the footage, I go, that one's mean and it's not even really true. I was saying it to say it. So let's just cut it.
Let's just cut it. Yeah. And that's the power of editing, everyone.
And that's the girl power of editing.
That's the girl power of editing. And if you, I don't know, if you have more fun facts about the Spice Girls, I'd love to hear about them. You can email me at buttersongpod@gmail.com. I'm also on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok at buttersongpod. What? I
was going to say, if your listeners don't have more fun facts about the Spice Girls, how in the hell are they in your orbit? I feel like your listenership is the kind of listenership that's like, yes, I know 30 facts about each of them. Where do I start?
I would love that. Honestly, if you have 30 facts about the Spice Girls, go to town. And if you want to be part of the next episode's conversation, well, we just, like I said at the top, we just started John's picks for this month, and we're going to be talking about something completely different. Next episode is going to be on The Tales of Hoffman, an opera.
Yeah, with some ballet in it as well.
With some ballet, yeah.
That's a Pressinger, Powell and Pressinger, right?
Yes.
From like the 50s?
P- Is it Pressinger? I thought it was Pressburger or something like that.
Oh, maybe it's Pressburger.
Yeah.
It's the dudes who did the Red Shoes.
Yes.
Yes, yes, yes. Because Moira Shearer is in it as well.
Yeah. So everyone, get ready for a wild month of selections that have nothing to do with anything except I wanted to do them.
That's all. That's the power of having a podcast, John. It's
I know.
Anything you want to do.
Finally. But like now it's like I'm picking. And like you said, you had fun watching this. So I didn't torture you like I did with Cop Rock, which I'm a little upset about. But whatever. They all can't be Cop
Listen,
Rock.
Listen, I have picked things that you've had to watch. It was only made sense that you give me Cop Rock after all the shit I've made you watch.
Yeah, I have one more idea for you that I'll tell you off air for a future
Fantastic.
Episode. But anyway, everyone, thank you for listening, and bye for now.
Bye.
Special thanks to Aaron Troy for creating the pod's artwork and to Nick Bombacino for composing the theme song and the jingles. A huge thank you to CastBox for hosting this podcast. And thank you again for tuning in to today's episode of Life's But a Song. Bye for now, everyone, and have a musical day.